Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by RamVPN.com, the leading provider of next-generation online anonymity and VPN security solutions. Their architecture is unique, tamper-safe, and 100% guaranteed. They even accept Bitcoin. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive a 15% discount in 3-month and 6-month personal plans by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. For more promotional offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. Back in 2011, I did an interview with Bertram Verhaagh about his groundbreaking documentary, Scientists Under Attack. In light of what has been going on in the scientific community, I thought many of you might want to hear it if you haven't heard it already. Today, my very special guest is Bertram Verhaagh, and we're going to be talking about his film, Scientists Under Attack, Science in the Magnetic Field of Money. Now, they say that money is the root of all evil. When it comes to corporate responsibility, this is clearly the case, as the only legal responsibility corporations have is to make money for their shareholders. The chemical companies have clever marketers spinning ads promoting the healthfulness of genetically modified organisms, while at the same time deploying thug tactics to silence anyone, including established and well-respected scientists that have done the research to prove otherwise. Filmmaker Bertram Verhaagh is the producer of a documentary called Scientists Under Attack, Science in the Magnetic Field of Money, which takes a closer look at the ruthless tactics deployed by these companies as he revealed to the audience the attacks that scientists who have uncovered the truth about GMOs have actually suffered. Now, featured in this film are anti-GMO activist Jeffrey Smith, Professor Ignacio Chapella, Dr. Andrew Kimbrell, who's also head of the Center for Food Safety, and he's one of two lawyers who sued the Food and Drug Administration back in 1998. Also featured is Professor Arpad Pusai, who's a 35-year world-renowned biochemist and leading expert on food studies, who was suspended for lifetime back in 1999 after making his findings public about GMOs in a sheer 150-second interview, which the funny thing is that he was first praised and then threatened thereafter with lawsuits. So if you don't understand still what the dire threat of GMOs and why we as people need to take action, this is one segment that you really need to pay attention to. And feel free to encourage your friends and family that really don't understand what exactly is going on to listen to today's segment, because my guest has worked directly with these people and he has so much information to share with everyone today. So please welcome Bertram Verhaagh. Good evening, Bertram.
Yes, thank you. Good evening and good afternoon for you.
Thank you. And it's amazing. I love technology. We are able to connect with so many people around the globe. The Organic View radio show has such an amazing audience. People around the globe can listen to the podcast archives, which is not only available on theorganicview.com, but on iTunes, Zune, every major podcast provider that's out there. And it's amazing that the information is so easily available. And the fact that we have over 1 million listeners in just such a short space of time really is just tremendous. So I am so happy that I can talk to you today and hopefully enlighten and educate my audience, especially those that either are not familiar with the people that you have interviewed, as well as the subjects that you've explored. So at this point, can you please talk about yourself, and can you just talk about how you got into filmmaking?
Well, That's a long story because I make films in more than 30 years already. And I studied economics and then I worked here in Munich in the development of the town, an apartment who thinks about development. And we made studies, and some of these studies were done. It is the council of the town who asked for the studies, and then they took it for secret, and they were never published. And so I thought, I don't want to work 2 years, and then it would be somewhere in a cupboard or what. And then, per chance, I can't remember quite well, I went to the film school here in Munich for 3 years, and then with two friends I started a company and making films. This was in 78 already. And we decided at that time that we only want to make films on political, on social, on environmental subjects. And that we did for all this more than 30 years. And we made a very famous film on racism, which I shot in the United States, in Iowa and Kansas City, with Jane Elliott. The name of the film is Blue Eyed. And it's very, very good, sold as DVD and VHS in earlier times in the United States. And it's, if you don't know Jane Elliott, she is a person who made a sort of, or let me tell you, she was a teacher in Iowa. And at the time when Martin Luther King was killed, she wanted to explain to her students why he was killed, why a man only because he was not white was killed in this society. And then he made an experiment with her students, dividing them in blue-eyed and brown-eyed people. And she treated the blue-eyed people for 1 day like brown-eyed. And they were not allowed to speak together and to drink from the same thing and everything. And this was very, very impressive for these children. And but she was not very loved by her the other teachers and the director. And very soon he left the... She left the school and did this work, which I described with this role-playing with brown-eyed and blue-eyed, with people and companies, and she moved really a lot with this. And we made a film, and this was our most impressive and very famous film, Blue-Eyed. And I think it changed a lot because we had a very good response here in Germany and even in Australia when it was shown. They showed it 4 and 5 times once more, and there was a big, big movement after this film. That was great. But let's speak about GMO. It was 10 years ago, I was, or more, 15 years ago, I was asked to make a film on a cancer mouse, which was patented at that time here at the European Patent Office. And I said, I don't know anything about this. I'm not a scientist, and I'm just a journalist, and I'm not able to make such a film. You have to ask somebody else. And then it took some years that I read a very small article on the so-called Terminator gene or Terminator plants. That means the industry changed plants, making them sterile, and that's why the word is Terminator. And then from 1 second to another, I understood why genetic engineering is done. It's not to bring us any better quality or more food or whatever. It's only to get power over the market, because in this case of Terminator genes, you can plant them out, you can yield them, but you can't use it once more for the next year. And this is over thousands of years old right of farmers that they keep some of their yield and put it in the earth for the next year. And industry wanted to get power on this, and they forced the farmers, because the seed is sterile, they forced the farmers to buy new seeds every year.
Now, isn't it also true that any of the existing crops that are exposed to it also become sterile?
Yes, that's a danger. But let me continue, because
sure.
I said, suddenly I recognized I don't have to be a scientist to make a film on this subject, because I'm just a consumer, I'm a member of the society, and I don't want that the industry is making the heart of life, the seed, the crops, sterile. I don't want this, and I'm not asked if they are allowed to do this, because they wanted to spread it all over the world in this way.
Mm.
And this made me furious, and I entered this area of genetic engineering. And the second thing was that I recognized that industry is introducing such a big thing in society without asking the people. And that is not democratic, because it is not reversible. If you change plants or crops into genetic engineered ones. And so I started with this work, and we made our first film, or one of our first films, which was Life Running Out of Control. It's also available in the U.S. With Bullfrog Films.
Mm.
And this film is between one, or in 1 year, it was the standard work on genetic engineering. Because if you don't know anything about it, look at this film, you will understand. You will understand why industry is doing it. And you will understand the dangers which come with genetic engineering.
Well, I think what is also important to mention is the fact that you are not just producing some film for entertainment, or God knows, you're not doing this for the money, because this isn't a way that you're going to make a lot of money in anytime soon. But you're connecting directly with the people who are doing the research. And, you know, it's very similar to what I've been doing. And I think it's important, because people like movies, people like films, they prefer to watch something than to read about it or to even listen to it. And I think that especially if you could put something together that is not only based upon fact, but also is educational, that really is a great recipe for success. Because I think when we empower the people, and it doesn't matter what country they're in, or what their beliefs are, but when you give people information, especially when it's information based upon facts, that is what changes things.
Yeah, and I think you have to do it in a way that people can understand it, that they can follow you. My situation was the same. I said, I'm not a scientist, I don't understand anything, I didn't learn in school what a gene is, and so on. And then I entered slowly, slowly, and slowly, and I learned with making these films. And I think that is the way that also the viewers of my films can understand, because they can follow my ideas and learning about these things. And in the last 10 years, I made 9 films on this subject.
Wow.
9 films, that means that after each film, there came new ideas, and new things are coming up, or new poisons, or a new strategy of the companies, or whatever.
And I just want to make it clear for anybody that's listening today that we're not here to bash business. Both of us are very much in support of business, people having businesses. There's nothing wrong with having a business or wanting to make money. The problem that we are discussing is the fact that the corporations do not have a moral or ethical obligation. They only have one obligation, and that is to make money for their shareholders. They are not remotely concerned to as far as what happens to people that are subjected to the products that they have, that they've been producing. And that is where the problem lies. And especially if you have people who are scientists, who are well-educated, who have the actual expertise, and, you know, they have been doing this for a number of years, who understand what is going on. And when these scientists actually speak out and say, hey, look, you know, we need to stop, we need to rethink this, all of a sudden, because they object, they are becoming the targets of all these attacks. And that is a very, very important issue to discuss.
Yeah, what I learned is that there is no more responsibility for the nature or for the people or for the consumers. That doesn't matter. It's only money, and to get power. And a company like Monsanto, they don't hesitate to say, we want to get the power from the field to the table on to the dishes on the table. You know, the whole area. And you can really have the power over people if you have the power over food. And you see in the last years how the prices of food are mounting. And especially the people in the third world, they were suffering under this. And my motivation is because I'm not just doing it as a neutral journalist or so. I'm doing it as somebody who lives here, who has to eat every day, and who wants to know what he is eating or what is offered and what is in our food. And that's why I'm doing this research and doing these films. And I spoke ago about this film, Life Running Out of Control. And the last sentence in this film is from a scientist in Norway who said he thinks that only 5% of the scientists who were working in this area are independent. The other were dependent to industry or they were paid by industry. And that made me curious, and I wanted to know more about it. And I found two main scientists who did some research in this area. They came to results, and from their personal responsibility, they published this, what they found. And industry was furious because they were paying for this, and they said, he has not the right to do it, and so on, and so on. And they really punish these people. And also Percy Schmeisser is one person. He's a farmer in Canada. And he was sued by Monsanto over 10 years. And this is a sign for other farmers or for young scientists. If you are looking at this and this and this, and if you are questioning the wrong things, you will be punished like these examples, which you know. We didn't speak about this. Once it is Arpad Pusztai. Arpad Pusztai, he is a Hungarian scientist who went during the Hungarian, or when the Russians came to Hungary in 56, he went to England because he hoped that he can work there freely. And he did this for 35 years, and he was a world-famous man who was an expert in feeding studies. That means he feeds rats or mice to test how will be the reactions or how the organs will react on what he is feeding them, and to get ideas what will happen with humans if they eat it. And he got from the English. From the English government, they asked him to look at genetically modified potatoes to find some ideas how they can judge over genetically modified fruit or potatoes or a maze or whatever, to find, I don't know the right word, to find a measurement. And then he did his tests. He made himself potatoes which were genetically modified, and then he fed them to his mice. But he didn't do this as industry normally is doing for a short time, but he did it for 110 days. And then what he found was for him really alarming, because he found that the immune system was no more the same, that the weight of the organs was different, and. A lot of things, and he said, this is a sign we have to look deeper in this. We can't do it only for 100 days. We have to do it longer. We have to do it for several generations of these mice or rats. And then per chance, a TV company came by and was interviewing him for something else. And they asked him what he was doing in the moment and so on. And he said, okay, I did this feeding studies, and the result is that we have to look more and deeper in this. And there was 1 minute and 50 seconds or so was published, and some days later he said, I don't like that my fellow citizens were used as guinea pigs. That was one thing, and the second thing, I wouldn't eat it until I know exactly what's going on in animals and humans if they eat this genetically modified food. And some days later, he has to leave his laboratory, and he couldn't work anymore. He was forbidden to phone. He was even in a new contract forbidden to speak about anything what happened there in this institute and what he found out. And it was luckily that the English Parliament heard of this, and they invited him to speak about this. And so he was allowed in the future to speak about what his studies have been. And that was the reason that we couldn't do the film and speak with him about what he found.
Wow,
this is one example. And he was thrown out of the Royal Society, which is like a science academy here in Europe, and he is not rehabilitated until today.
Oh, that's a pretty devastating situation to be in. I mean, folks, for those of you that are listening, imagine if you had a career that you worked very hard, and you are very well established, you're very well respected, and then all of a sudden, because you're doing your job, you are basically, for the most part, excommunicated and considered to be an outcast. I mean, this is very disturbing that this could even happen in this day and age, all because he is doing what he has been doing for how many years. Mm-hmm. This is what these companies are doing. They are basically pulling these thug tactics to destroy lives. And these are the lives of the people who are actually doing the research to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that I have said this many times to people. It's interesting. If you're walking down the street and somebody just walks up to you and assaults you, of course you're going to be upset, and you're going to look to, depending upon what they do to you, you're going to do something about it. You're going to say, hey, either stop hurting me or you're going to call the police. Well, if a corporation hurts you, it's funny. People are just letting these things go. And the fact that the people who are protecting us, who are the scientists, I mean, that's what scientists do. They do research. And the research is very important for a myriad of reasons, especially when it comes to our food safety. And also, I'd like to point out that if there's something new, most people, if you just give them something blindly without telling them what it is, they're going to say, you know, what is this? They want to know what it is before they eat it. So why wouldn't you want to know what's in something before you consume it? And especially if you're talking about something that is been created in a laboratory, of course you're going to want to know what's in it. This what he said basically is sheer common sense. So for anyone that is out there listening, this is nothing unusual.
Maybe we should say two or three sentences on genetic engineering, what the industry is doing. They were changing the cell of a plant. Let's say it's soya or soy, as you say. Mm-hmm. And they change this soy, changing some genes, that this soy will be resistant to the poison that they were selling with the seeds of the soy. And that means you can put this poison on the field. Everything is dying in the field, but only the soy will survive. And that's the idea which is behind this. And I think that is a terrible, terrible thing, that they were poisoning the earth and killing everything around just for money and profit and to be able to patent this plant. And they didn't develop this plant. This plant was created by farmers over hundreds of years, and they just put one gene in. And they say, now this plant is ours. Or they say, this gene is ours, but the gene is in the plant, and so the plant is theirs. But the terrible thing is nature reacts on this. That I was in Brazil during the shooting, and we saw that the, what are the names? The wheat around the soy plant became, after 5 years already, resistant. And they were growing quicker than the plant, and they were taking the light and the sun from the plant. The plant couldn't really
get... It couldn't grow, yeah. It's not going to propagate, especially if these weeds are becoming stronger because they're completely resisting the chemicals.
Yeah. And the reaction of the farmer is, if it was allowed to put 1 liter glyphosate, they now took 8 liter glyphosate because they were in fear that they couldn't save their yield, but they finally couldn't save it, and they use more and more poisons, and the industry is offering more and stronger poisons. They offer the poison that they used in Vietnam already, this 2,4-D, or what is this called, and offered this to the farmer, and the farmer used it. And the next step was for industry to offering, because this soy was only resistant to one poison. But now they are creating, per genetic engineering, plants which were resistant to 6 or 8 different poisons. And maybe they know each poison, but they don't know, and it's not looked at. There's no research, no public research, nothing, how the reaction between these different poisons will be. If the farmers were in trouble and they use this, and the next day they use another poison, just to save their seeds. Not the seeds, but their yield.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that this, in turn, is creating a problem because of the fact that the more chemicals that they're dumping on the land, the more devastation is occurring with the pollinators, more specifically with the honeybees. And, you know, it's further devastating the already drastically declining honeybee population. So everything does tie into everything else. And, you know, folks, if you like to eat food, you could thank a beekeeper for that. But the bottom line is the more chemicals that are dumped on the crops, the worse it's getting. Now, one of the things that I want to ask you also is, when it comes to the introduction of these actual chemicals to the farmers, it's kind of interesting how they go about doing it. Can you just take a moment to explain what you found how these chemical corporations go about introducing these products, almost like a reward to the farmer that is choosing to utilize their technology.
Yeah, we made a film about Percy Schmeisser, this Canadian farmer who got genetically modified raps. What is raps?
The GM soy.
No, it was not soy. With his case, it was rape, I think.
Yeah, rape meat, the canola.
Yeah, canola, yes, that's it. And it was blown by the wind on his field. And then Monsanto, they have an army of people who were running over the fields, taking plants, and they were analyzing this. And they said, here you have our plants, our patent on your field. And they took him to court. But Percy Schmeisser, he was not a simple farmer. He was already, he was also an official in his town and so on, and he was used to such things. And he went on his side to court too. And he went within 10 years until the Supreme Court in Canada. And the Supreme Court in Canada ruled, okay, you took the plants from Monsanto, but you are not guilty because you didn't use the patent. Because if he would have used the patent, he should have bought also Roundup. That means there is a canola, and I buy Roundup, everything is dying, only the canola is surviving. And that he didn't do. But from Monsanto, his all his canola that he developed during the last 50 years of his life were destroyed. And finally, he was very, very successful, and there is a funny story, because he stopped growing canola, but after years, still some canola plants were in his soil and coming up. And he phoned Monsanto, here there were some canola plants on my field, come and examine them and take them out. And Monsanto came and said, okay, it's our plant, you are right, they were patented by us, but we only take them out of your field if you sign us a contract that you don't speak anymore about this publicly, that you don't go to court and everything. And Percy and his wife said, no, we are not silly, we don't do this. And then Monsanto said, yeah, then we leave the plant there. Then Percy said, okay, then I take some neighbors and take the plants out myself. And he did so, and he sent an invoice over $600 to Monsanto and said, this was the cost, please pay me this cost. Monsanto said, no, we don't pay it. And he went to court. And just before the second session of the court, Monsanto came and gave him his check with $600, because they saw if we go to the end, it's not good for us. But finally, there is a decision that the company who owns this plant is responsible. And Percy is telling to other farmers, they were responsible, use this, you don't have to be anxious about it. But in real, a lot of people have, they are fearing, because it's a billion-dollar company, you know, and they can afford a lot of money and...
Well, they threatened him. I mean, they even, he had to take out a second mortgage on his house, I do believe, and they actually tried to pay, buy the mortgage from the bank and take his house from under him. I mean, they made death threats, all sorts of stuff, and he's been on the show twice, and he's spoken about what his what it was like to go through that, and to this day, he is traveling around the globe, sharing his story, encouraging farmers to take a stand and to do something, because the bottom line is that farmers do have options. Farmers can win in court.
Yes, that's right. And he is, I think, nearly 80 years now. And
he just turned 80 this year, yeah.
Twice a year he's coming to Europe and making his speeches. And it's enormous, the reaction that people have here, because normally they don't know it. And he is always telling, don't make the same mistakes that we made in Canada. Because in Canada, we have no more canola, which is not genetically modified. Because by the wind and by the mixtures in the silos, and so it is mixed up.
And folks, in case you don't understand why this is important, just take a look at all the products that are not only in your home, in your pantry, your refrigerator, the products that you eat, the foods that you buy or order when you're at a restaurant. Most likely, there is something that contains the canola oil or one of the other GM... one of the other GM seeds in it. And, I mean, look at vegetable oil. Vegetable oil is made mostly from either canola oil or the soybean oil. And the soybean oil that they're using and the canola oil that they're using is all genetically modified. It's cheaper for them. And course,
we don't know what is happening if we eat it. We don't know it.
That's because it's not labeled.
Yeah, it's not labeled. Yeah, that's right. We in Europe have the situation that we have a law that we call a genetic law or so, which says each food has to be labeled if it contains more than 0.9% genetically modified parts. But you don't find them in the supermarket. The reason is because the industry who makes the food avoids this because they know people wouldn't buy it. And what they not included in this law was that everything which comes from animals like meat, milk, cheese, and butter, and so on, because all the animals, or maybe 90% of the animals here, are fed with genetically modified soy or maize or corn. And this is not included in the law. But not because it's not dangerous, but because there is this importation from US, from Canada, from Brazil, from Argentina here, and the companies are fighting hard that there will be no law on labeling this meat and butter and milk and whatever.
It's
a terrible thing, because in Europe they said, okay, we make a moratorium, and they made a moratorium. They closed the frontiers to everything which was genetically modified from 1998 to 2004, because there were Italy and France who said, okay, we want this law because it's necessary that the consumer can decide from the labeling, do I want to buy this or do I not want to buy this?
We
made this law, but excluded from the law is still milk and eggs and everything. It comes from animals. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. And what's interesting is that I just wanted to interject that there was an actual quote back in 1994, and it was quoted in the Kansas City Star from Norman Bratzik, who was, I don't know if he still is, the president of Asgrow Seed Company, which is a subsidiary of Monsanto, and he basically said, quote, if you put a label on genetically engineered food, you might as well put a skull and crossbones on it, end quote.
Yeah.
So that one quote, and I'm sure he regrets having said it, because that was basically the quote that went around the world very quickly and really got people's attention.
Mm-hmm. And it's because people try to avoid genetically modified food. It's not from knowing really what's happening, but it's from an inner feeling. And what I want to do with my films to give this feeling some arguments, because I think and I learned in the last 10 or 15 years that it is right that we have to be cautious, very, very cautious with genetically modified food. And the second thing which is happening in the moment, I told you already, the farmers are using more poison and more poison and more poison. And this poison is on the soybeans. And these soybeans were fed to animals. And they come into the animals. And then we eat the meat of these animals. And there is no research how much of this poison comes to us when we eat the meat of these animals or eggs or whatever. But there is a study in Canada where a scientist looked at people who were going, or ladies who were going to have babies. And 93% of them had glyphosate in their blood. Nobody would have thought of this earlier. And the very bad thing is that they also made this research with the babies. And they found that a very, very high percentage of the babies had already also glyphosate in their blood. And that means it's all over. And you can buy a Roundup. Roundup is this poison which contains mainly glyphosate. And you can buy it in a Baumarkt, we say here in Germany.
Oh, you can buy it pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, you can buy it anywhere. You can buy it in the internet. And people are using it in their garden, in their foregarden, in the way to their garage. And it's in schools, in parks, everywhere it is used. Because Monsanto is promising, you want to have it clean. And we can make it clean, clean only for the eyes, but in the earth is poisoned and poisoned and poisoned. And it's not going away, this glyphosate. This glyphosate stays in the earth and comes from the earth to the plant. The glyphosate is killing the earth. It's killing the microorganisms and I don't know exactly the name, which we need for us, mangan and magnesium and all these small parts, which are very, very important for our life.
Yes, the micro and the macroorganisms. They work hand in hand. Yeah. My next question for you is: how are the corporations infiltrating our universities, and what information are they trying to obtain? And lastly, how are they altering what science is and what it is not?
Yeah, that it was another example in our film we portrayed Ignazio Chapella. Ignazio Chapella is meanwhile a professor in Berkeley, California, at the university there. And for years he was fighting against money coming from industry. There was Novartis, who offered the university $50 million. And he was able, with his students together, to make half of it, only $25 million. And then, some years later, it was in the mid of the 2000s, BP comes up and offered $500 million for research, as they said. But really, they made a contract with the university and they tried to get influence on the plan, what is researched at the university, what are people are learning in school, even in kindergarten. They want to influence all these programs. And they take for them the right, if something is found at that university, in a research, something important that that scientists research, that they have the right to look first at it. And then they can decide, we want it, we want to patent it, or we want to do this or this, or we don't want you to publish it. They took this right too. This is not in general. There were a lot of universities in the United States or all over the world when companies are giving money to the universities without these restrictions and without saying, okay, we want to influence your subjects of research and whatever. But in Berkeley, it was really terrible how they try to get influence. And
so they're basically trying to worm their way in, because especially with if they're donating big money, you know, that goes over well, especially with the administration. And, you know, you look at all the major universities.
Let me tell one example. Like, if somebody, a researcher, maybe there was this lady Ermakova in Russia, who did some research with rats, and she fed this rat to this rat's genetically modified soy. Then he has results that in the second generation, a lot of these rats died very early and surprisingly. And she published this. And she was immediately attacked by industry and by Monsanto and said, that is no scientific research, because you don't have a parallel group with the same soy, but not genetically modified. But the thing is that Monsanto doesn't give this line out to the scientists to make this comparison between, because they have a mother line from a certain crop, and then they have it, the same crop, genetically modified. And if you make research, you have to have both of this. But they don't give it to the scientists. Or sometimes, if they give it, they do it only with a contract that says you don't have the right to publish anything about your research, only if we allow it and if we proved it in advance. And that is not free science, and it's impossible.
Wow. That is really disturbing. I mean, you're looking at the very places where our scientists are educated and trained, and if they are going to be put in situations where they can't do what scientists are supposed to do, but they're basically supposed to do only what is dictated to them, then that's not true research. That's basically doing something for a specific, to achieve a specific result.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And unfortunately, this has been the wave of, what they would like to think is going to be our future.
Mm-hmm.
But we know better.
And I ask you, sorry that I'm speaking so loud and so nerved, because I can't speak about it, because it's so terrible what these multinationals are doing with our earth, with nature. They destroyed in the last 50 years 40% of the fertility of the earth all over the world. And that is, if you think over the next 50 years, we wouldn't be able to plant anything anymore. Then we really get the food from the supermarket, as a lot of people think who don't look at the countryside. And there was a study, the World Agrar Report,
yes,
some years ago, where 700 scientists in the order of the World Bank and the FAO, the it's a UN organization for food, responsible for food. And they made this research, how we could survive on this planet. And the World Bank was asking, in which area should we invest money, which is really has a look in the future. And this scientist came to the result that this monoculture is destroying everything, and genetic engineering is destroying everything, like I said, the fertility of the earth. The only way to survive is to have it in a sustainable, organic, small farms who produce really with responsibility the food. That's the only way to survive. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a possibility to get any more some fruits from the earth.
Now, what do you think, with all the people that you have met and interacted with and spoken to, what has really made the biggest impact on you? Just as a consumer, as a human being, just as somebody who is looking to find the truth?
Yeah, it's maybe in the moment it's always new people coming up, but I met Andres Carrasco in Berlin 4 weeks ago, and he was speaking to a department of the German parliament, and he is from Argentina. He is a scientist, and he looked at the people, or he found out that a lot of people were misbuilded, or there were the fetuses were damaged, and so because of the spraying of poison with planes all over the country. If there is a small village or a river, it doesn't matter. There were planes who going over this and spraying the poison. And then he made experiments for himself with frogs. And he gave this to these frogs only a small amount, not that amount which is done on the field, a very, very smaller amount. And he found that the newborn had... I don't know the words. They were deformed, and it was just the same as he saw by the people who came to his ordinary. And this is really absolutely disgusting for me. And even if I want to make another film on this, because it's not so known. But the people here in Europe and all over the world, but I'm here in Europe, and I want the people in Europe to know that we are responsible for this poisoning in Argentina, because we want to buy this soy to feed it to our animals and then to eat the meat. And we have to stop such amounts of meat, one or two times a week, but not every day, and not throw it away if. But we are responsible for the poison which is brought out in Bangladesh in the same way as in Argentina or Brazil.
Well, people should really pay attention to what they're eating to begin with. I mean, most people have not made that connection that the animals are being fed all the genetically modified food, and they're eating everything from milk, cheese, hamburger meat, chicken, what have you, and you are what you eat. And if the animals are eating it, you're eating it, especially if you're eating the animals. When people are confused about this, I ask them, you know, if you see a woman who's pregnant and she's smoking or she's doing drugs, how do you feel about that? They say, oh, that's horrible. She shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's going to affect the unborn child, so on and so forth. And the reality is that that's basically what's happening today with these animals that are used for human consumption, whether it's the milk that they produce that is turned into ice cream or cheese or any type of product that we consume. And so for me, I can't stress it enough that you really have to pay attention, and that's all the more reason why people need to do something. And one of the things that they can easily do is choose not to support these companies that are utilizing these types of foods that are genetically modified or have been produced with these neonicotinoids, amongst other pesticides and chemicals.
The only possibility is to eat biological organic food.
Yes, exactly.
This is controlled, and then you know these people are responsible. They don't use genetically modified crops or whatever.
And that is basically what we can do, because most people think that, what is it going to matter if I do this? Well, everything does add up, and if more people understand what we're talking about and if they start making better decisions. And the thing is that you're basically cheating your health when you're buying non-organic. The bottom line is that one way or the other, you will pay.
Yes.
And the cost that's involved with recovering from illness is quite an expense. People tend not to think about things until they are faced with it. And if you just avoid it altogether as much as humanly possible, the healthier you will be. And that is a fact. Now, the last thing that I'd like to ask you is, are you going to be producing another film, either related to this subject, or what are you going to be working on next?
Yeah, we are preparing our 10th film on genetic engineering or what is around this. But I wanted to say in the last 10 years, we not only made films on genetic engineering and this terrible result, but also on good, sustainable agriculture. And we needed to have this to be on fields which were sane, and you have the feeling that you can eat it from the field directly. But the next project that we are planning is, I told you already about the resistance, about the use of more poison, and the illnesses which were coming out of this. But we made a treatment in this direction, and then we found out it's too terrible. You can't offer this to consumers or to the public, and we have to add it up with an alternative. And so we found three big ideas which were told parallel to this poisoning and resistance and illness. That is three examples of good, sustainable, organic farming. The first example is in Africa. There were some people who found a method to against insects. They call it push and pull. That means they were planting grass in the middle of the field where the corn is growing, and this grass is it's pushing the insects away. And then they come to the border of the field, and there they plant a sort of grass which is attracting the insects. But in the same time, this plant is producing something which like honey, you know. And the bee and the insects are coming up. They were caught by this honey and they die there. And that is a method. It's so good and so wonderful, because the people have a yield which is 60-70% higher than before, because they don't have to sacrifice it to the insects. And the grass which they plant is also a good feed for the cows, and they have more milk, and so on and so on. The second example is the farm of Prince Charles in England. Since 30 years, he has built a wonderful organic farm, and we can show how they do it and how they learn, because they started also as a conventional farmer. And they learned and tried and found out, and the prince is running all those birds. When he gets some ideas, he came back and told this to his farmer, and he is trying to realize it there. And the third example is in Egypt. There is a man from Egypt who decided to buy a piece of desert, and then he bought a herd of cows, and with the dung of the cows he made compost, and with the compost he made the desert. And he took water from 30 meter deep and nowadays he has a wonderful, wonderful farm there. He is in the highest biodynamic way. He is producing fruit, and he has a growth from 30% per year, because every people who were thinking, who wants to buy this food, because this is really recovering us and helping us and helping against diseases and so. And so this will be the story of the film. On the one hand, the destroying of the earth, the poisoning of the earth, and on the other hand, earth which is really vivid and which we can leave better than we found it here on the earth for the next generation.
Well, Bertrand, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was wonderful having you, and we are out of time. But I would like to encourage our audience to check out your website. And can you just please give us your website?
Yes, it is www.denkmal-film.com denkmal-film.com, and there we have a shop, and you will find all films, and most of them also described in English, and it's life running out of control, what I told, Scientists Under Attack, our newest film, which is very, very coming up in the United States too, because I'm more and more interviewed, like you made this interview by Skype, and it's in the first days when we had this distribution in the States for this film, they sold 3,000 DVDs already. It was terribly good, and I'm very proud that I can, yeah, work in this way.
Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with your Organic View Radio Show.